Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Dieter Kurtenbach is here. He's back.
Hi,
for a triumphant return.
Let's go with that.
Triumph is here. And I haven't had Dieter on the podcast for a while because Dieter's got a lot going on in his life. He's dealing with the 49ers. He's dealing with, you know, whatever we want to call the Warriors. He's dealing with planning a wedding in Scotland right now from the Bay Area.
Yeah.
He also randomly has a dog in his house right now.
Not thrilled about the latter one. The latter one is a godless killing machine and more like a cat.
I am very excited to get a chance to chat with you despite all of those factors. Because
it's amazing I could carve out time for one of my best friends.
I know, right? Like, it's crazy.
Our mojo a little bit, buddy.
It's crazy.
I miss you in my life. I got my priorities all wrong.
It's because you're stuck writing these bad quarterback takes on these teams
screw
that
you.
Play the 49ers. The Kirk Cousins one was fine. I agree with you on Kirk Cousins. He's just like a fine quarterback now.
But we're holding on so dearly to this old version of Aaron Rodgers, and he's let it go, so you can let it go too.
I don't think he's let it go. I've watched every Packers game this year because Laura is randomly a Green Bay Packers fan. And, like, we're talking a real Green Bay Packers fan for someone that grew up in Melbourne, right?
Super
like,
weird.
I think that it's like she liked the green and yellow colors, which are obviously Australia colors, when they play in international competition. She really likes Aaron Rodgers, too. So she's like, she has dove headfirst into being a Packers fan. So I've watched every Packers game this year, and I don't get at all where you're coming from with saying, like, Aaron Rodgers is not great anymore.
Yeah, he isn't.
Of it is that we have to figure out how to like categorize the throwaways, because I think he has like 50 more throwaways than anyone else in the NFL this year, which is
jarring the amount of throwaways. I mean, and it's not like, listen, there is value to some. He is well over the acceptable limit of throwaways. At some point,
I don't know if I agree with that.
Conceding. It's like bunting in baseball, a throwaway.
Not always. No, because it's
not always. Not always. Sometimes the pitcher has to come up, and you're like, "Thank God he can bunt."
Well, it's more risk avoidance, whereas like a bunt is like a strategic play. Like, I guess that the throwaway is a strategic play, but like it's
every down is sacred, Sam. Every down is sacred.
Yeah, but I guess that my point is that like Aaron Rodgers' completion percentage is down to like 62% or 63% or something
because of the throwaways.
In part because of the throwaways. But when he is, like, not throwing the ball away and his receivers get any sort of separation, he is still capable of putting it, like, right on the numbers, right on the chest from
He's capable of doing the most average thing a quarterback can do? Like, if he has a clean pocket and his wide receivers get full separation, he's still able to throw an accurate pass. I'm wondering when we throw a parade for that.
But it's not just, like, 5 yards of separation. Like, if his receiver gets 1 to 2 yards of separation,
yeah,
he can hit it.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between a great
quarterback. That was really That was really cool 10 years ago. The top quarterback, like, there's like 15 dudes in the NFL that can do it right now. Quarterbacks got really good.
I don't really agree with that, to be honest. I'll run through the guys that I think are better than him. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not Patrick Mahomes.
No.
He's not Russell Wilson.
No.
I don't know if I would rather have him or Deshaun Watson right now. I think I would probably take Deshaun, but it's close.
I think so too, but we could have a conversation about Deshaun's problematic pocket presence.
I think it's close on Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
And realistically, I think that's it.
Okay, but there are probably a couple more that are in that class, and we don't need to go into it. There's no question that Aaron
like what Rodgers, like you would say like Matt Ryan.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, there's also, let's take into account here the way that the NFL is moving, which is offensive lines suck. And defensive lines have gotten just massively better.
Sure.
There used to be like one dude on a defensive line that was super scary and have to double team. Like, it seems like every defensive line has three of those dudes now. I mean, the Ravens had the worst defensive line in the playoffs this year, and they were still like, oh my God, some of these guys would kill you.
And their defensive line functions differently than most defensive lines because 100%. They get all of their pass rush basically from linebackers, whereas
correct.
Like it's Judon, it's who's the other one? They have one other linebacker that like gets a shit ton of pressures. But like it's the way that it functions differently, and like you're spoiled too because you have the 49ers who have literally the best defensive line in football because they have Buckner, they have Bosa, they have Eric Armstead, they have like a million.
And when they have Ford in there, it's game over.
Right, exactly. So
By the way,
well, yeah, of course. Like D Ford's great. He hasn't been great this year, but like he's been great throughout the course.
The full argument that I'm making is that a lot of people that are talking about this game have anchored themselves to two thoughts. One is that Aaron Rodgers is still that wily old quarterback who could go over to the sideline and make it wildly, just a ridiculous. They remember that throw in Dallas that, you know, won a playoff game. You remember all of those crazy, like only Aaron Rodgers could do that throws, in which there are a couple of quarterbacks in the league that do that stuff all the time now, one of which is not Aaron Rodgers. They're holding on to this old idea of Aaron Rodgers, where the new Aaron Rodgers has significantly limited mobility, seems to just want to throw it away on any opportunity when the pocket breaks down. It just like that's his first go-to, which is not what the Aaron Rodgers that everyone knew and loved. And doesn't have any weapon. I mean, he has one weapon in the passing game. I mean, and he doesn't have, I think, a very good head coach. I think that Matt LaFleur is getting schooled. I think he's getting schooled.
What Packers games are you watching?
I'm watching the ones where first quarter and third quarter the Packers come out and look awesome, and as soon as the script goes away, they start looking like crap again.
Right, but isn't that coaching? Like being able to schedule plays?
That's what I said.
Matt LaFleur is getting schooled, you said.
Yeah, because he's getting dominated when the Packers have to get off schedule. He can't adjust.
But the prep and the schedule matters. Like that stuff is important.
No.
That's a part of coaching.
It does in the regular season when you're going up against Kirk Cousins, the Lions, and the Bears, but when you're playing in the NFC Championship game, that's not something that I would feel too comfortable with.
Yeah, and look,
we've reached the big boy stage now.
I have real concerns about them playing the 49ers. Like I think that like as someone who has a 10-1 Packers future, like I've basically been trying to.
And now we understand.
No, it's really more about Laura than anything on my end.
I would sure hope so.
But I'm telling you, man, like Aaron Rodgers is still really good. Like
I'm not saying he's trash. I'm just saying
it's a bad matchup against the 49ers, and I think the 49ers, because of that ability to get pressure all the time, they're going to win this game. But
and they're going to win it handily. I mean, I feel very confident about that. The only thing that, like, Rodgers is a better quarterback than Garoppolo. I don't know if it's that massive of a margin when you take into account offensive coordinators.
Yeah, I don't think LaFleur is as bad as you do. But I also think Kyle Shanahan is, like, a genius. So
they're just night and day in comparison. I think we're going to have very serious conversations about LaFleur going forward. I think that he's fine. I think that he's certainly not regressive. they still throw the ball on first down as much as anybody. I just don't see that much of a change than, like, he does a little bit more 21 or he does a little less 21 personnel than Mike McCarthy. Like, it just doesn't seem all that different to me. It's still Aaron kind of calling whatever play he wants at the line of scrimmage. Well, it's
complicated, you know, too, by the fact that they don't have the receiving weapons. Like, 100%. Alan Lazard is their number two receiver. And like, I like Alan Lazard, but, like, it's a lot.
Come on. Yeah. No, outside of Davante Adams, who, to be fair, was not healthy. He still had that turf toe injury the first time these two teams played. And old, washed-up Jimmy Graham. Like, there's nobody there that does it for you. So it's Aaron Jones.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham is a worse weapon than, like, Lazard at this stage, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, that's where we're going. I mean, Valdez Scantling, I don't know if he, like, had a limb amputated halfway through the season, but he ain't around.
Yeah, like, that plays directly into the 49ers because they'll just shadow Devontae with Sherman, I would assume.
They never do that. I don't know why. Maybe this is the week that they change their minds, but Richard they like the comfort of knowing that the right side of the field is shut down and that you have to throw to your left, and they can do a bunch of cover six stuff and mix match there. They can go into man on third down and just go four against seven. Like they really like leaving Sherman on the right side, which I imagine Adams is just going to spend the entire game as the left side sole X receiver, which I think is a good play. And then they'll probably shadow bracket him with Tarter Ward. Ward is a really good cover guy. So I do think it will be an interesting little matchup there. I would probably take the over on Adams receiving yards. But I just think the 49ers are going to be able to put 30 on the board. And I can't see a circumstance where the Packers do without a significant turnover margin.
Well, it's interesting because I think that what the Packers struggled with in the first 49ers game was getting enough pressure, right? Like, if you can pressure Garoppolo, and if you're the Packers, that's where I think that they have a chance to stay close. Like, that's really what it comes down to for me, and I don't know if they can do it.
I just saw a better defense. Now, mind you, a tired defense, but a better defense in the Vikings not really be able to rattle Jimmy all that much. The first time – listen, there's no question that the Smith – quote-unquote brothers are elite defensive ends, but they're, and Kenny Clark is just not getting the push up the middle that's necessary. I think the 49ers are going to be able to run the ball with just reckless abandon against this Packers team as they did in the first matchup, and the secondary for this Packers team is questionable at best. I have real questions about if they're going to be able to manage a Kyle Shanahan game plan. The nature of a Kyle Shanahan game plan isn't I'm going to call a bunch of really cool plays. Like, there's no question he draws up cool shit. It is the actual chess game, and I know it's a tired old cliche, but I'm writing this up. This is like one of the big features I've been working on for weeks. I've talked to like 50 fucking people about what makes Shanahan great. And the one thing that pretty much all of them who seemed to know what they were actually talking about said was he fucks with defenders' heads because he makes them break their own rules of defense. And with the Vikings, they play a lot of cover four quarters coverage, and that means that the safeties, the two split safeties, have to have two jobs on every play, and that's both run and protect against the pass. They have to make a read. And we saw, particularly when they went to 21 personnel in the second half, the safeties just didn't know where anything was going. And now you're going up against a much weaker secondary. And you could argue that the Viking secondary isn't all that, but they have some all pros out there. I think
it's a weaker secondary. The thing that is the only reason that I think this is a better matchup for the Packers than it is for the Vikings is because of the pass rush. The Packers were ninth in the NFL in pass rush win rate this year, and the Vikings were 26th. So, like, you can make a real case that's where they win it. But I think they will
get pressure on Garoppolo. I just don't think that they can then do the second part, which is necessary, which is really play physical with the 49ers receivers at the line of scrimmage as to knock off the timing. And that's what we saw so much of what the Vikings do against the Saints, which is they had a great pass rush. It was a gap pressure, which is really where every quarterback is going to struggle outside of Patrick Mahomes. A gap pressure, or maybe Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers back in the day, and maybe Russell Wilson too. But a gap pressure, and then they were so physical on the outside, and there was obviously all the charge of that stadium and pass interference, and it makes refs think twice about anything. So physical on the outside, it just messed up the Saints' timing, and without timing, that offense is nothing. I don't think that they're going to be able to do that at all. I don't see the I don't see the physicality in the Packers' secondary players. Shanahan was able to get shitty receivers open by 5 yards. I mean, he every year he's been with San Francisco, according to Next Gen Stats, the 49ers have had a receiver or two receivers in the top 10 of average separation, and it was receivers like Marquise Goodwin, like guys who don't run good routes and can't do it. Like Dante Pettis was massive in separation last year. He can't even get on the field this year. So you have good receivers. They can't cover Kittle. I mean, they can't do it. I think Blake Martinez is a cool guy, and all, he went to Stanford. Like, he's a Bay Area dude, but, like, Blake Martinez is a sitting duck out there, and that's a real problem. They just don't have the personnel to match up, and the Smith brothers are really good, but it doesn't make up for the glaring mismatches everywhere else. The same thing on the offensive end. Like, Aaron Rodgers is still a really good quarterback, but he's not the quarterback that he was a couple of years ago, to where he could just be like, everybody get on, I'm taking all 52 with me. He is a guy who cannot make up for the gap in talent between him and Garoppolo, which I don't think is that large at this juncture. And
I'll be honest, I think it's
basically
pretty
take
big.
The other 52 with him. It doesn't matter because the offensive coordinator.
But it doesn't
too,
matter. I think it doesn't. Like, I think that it's still pretty large. Like, I think Aaron is still probably the fifth best quarterback in the NFL. But
I will not be able to get over those throwaways, and the fact that he holds on to the ball for so long is death. I mean, the number one guy in holding on to the ball in the NFL is Kirk Cousins, and we saw how that worked out for him against the 49ers defense. Rodgers holds the ball for a tenth of a second less than Kirk Cousins on average. Like, he had 1.1 yard per drop back the last time these two teams played. Like, if it gets up to 2, I don't think that changes anything.
Yeah, but there's very clearly a difference in terms of the way that, like, Aaron Rodgers is able to attack a defense by holding on 100%. To the ball versus Kirk Cousins, but, like...
100%, but that accuracy on the run is not where it once was. It really isn't. He used to be the best in the league at it, and he is no longer that, which just makes him a Matt Ryan type, which I guess Ryan beat the 49ers, so maybe we have something here.
Yeah, I mean, he's better than Matt Ryan, I think, right now. He's better than... He would have to, like, get to the level that Russell Wilson has been at this year, which I don't think he has been. Like, I think Russell's been better than what Aaron has been this year.
No, I think it's markedly
better. For the Packers to have a shot, and the Packers would have to legitimately get pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. And
let's just call it what it is. Garoppolo, and he is very want to do this, would have to completely shit the bed.
Yeah, I was going to say, and the way that you do that is by getting pressure, I think.
Of course.
Like,
course.
That's really just how you do it. And I don't. But I
think they'll have the fast pass game. I think Kittle will be open all game, and they'll be able to run it with aplomb. Like, I think they'll probably just do what they did in the second half of the game against Minnesota and just take the ball out of Jimmy's hands, except on third down, and they won't have a problem. I mean, most teams, Garoppolo is statistically the best third down quarterback in the NFL too. So I don't think that they have an issue with just, like, you know, keeping them cold until third downs, going full Kirk Cousins on them. But
that's a big thing with Kittle too. Like, whenever you have Kittle, it's just such a safety blanket.
Yeah. And Emmanuel Sanders, who's just always going to be open. I mean, just get himself a little bit open. Debo Samuel, who's a run threat and a pass threat. And then you have Kendrick Bourne is not a very good receiver unless it's third down or a clutch situation, in which case he's somehow like the fucking second coming of Jerry Rice. I don't really get it. He drops everything on first and second down, but on third down, it's just like third and 18, not a problem. Kendrick Bourne's wide open. So it comes down to Shanahan. Shanahan's just really, really, really good. And with a really good defense behind it, one that he didn't have, if we're being totally honest, when Atlanta played in that Super Bowl, I have a hard time seeing them lose to a Packers team whose defense has been riding on a reputation it built in the first 4 weeks and has dropped since then, and an offense that throws the ball away a lot.
I guess this is sort of an NBA podcast. I don't know. Like...
Sam, really... I appreciate you honoring what I've been doing for the last couple of weeks and just letting me get these hot takes out there. Listen, I'm nothing if not a takesman, and you have to be pragmatic and go to where your audience wants to go, which is probably a different podcast at this juncture. So let's talk basketball.
Before we get into basketball, though, like I said, I have a 10-1 future on the Packers. It is conference championship time, though, and you can follow all the lines at BetOnline. The early game on Sunday features Tennessee against Kansas City. Kansas City is a touchdown favorite in that game, and I think it's probably going to be I think that has a chance to be a closer game.
You think you're going to take the value there, 7.5?
No, I'm probably going to stay away from that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I'd get in on an alt Chiefs line, or just take the Titans money line straight up.
Yeah, and then Sunday night is obviously the Green Bay San Francisco game. I'll probably hedge just by betting on San Francisco at this stage. That seems
I would again do what I did last night with Clemson and LSU, which is take the alternate line. I got LSU -9.5, and that paid out +125, which isn't all that great, but certainly better than just a regular spread bet. And that was, I'm buying a fire pit because of it. So I think the 49ers, if you can get an alternate line, get up to that double digits, take it.
Before we get into the NBA, can we talk about that game last night?
Yep.
By the way, who will reign supreme and host these and hoist these conference championship hardware? We'll see on Sunday. Before the next kickoff, head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. There are like a million typos on this copy I'm reading. For your first deposit, bring the playoffs home with our exclusive sportsbook partners at betonline.ag. I don't understand why sharps were on Clemson last night, do you?
I don't get it at all. I watched that. I mean, certainly you watched the Ohio State game. I watched it too. I saw Ohio State choke away a win against a Clemson team that could get no pass rush, that was questionable in, at the linebacker position. In fact, the linebacker position just looked glaring to me, and they're keeping two on the field every play, and I'm just like, these guys can't cover. Like, what are you doing here? I took that alternate line of 9.5 on LSU. I thought home field advantage. I thought that they had the better lines on both sides of scrimmage. It was a little hairy there for a minute, but it kind of seemed laughable to me. Like, Clemson, Ohio State was the second best team in this tournament.
Yeah, like, I think LSU had the best offense I've ever seen in college football. Like, I'm not being reactive to that. I legitimately believe that. I just thought they were going to boat race them. Like, they have four receivers. They have two receivers that are going to be first-round picks, one of whom is probably going to be a top-five pick, Ja'Marr Chase, right, in 2021. And they have two other receivers, Terrence Marshall and Thad Moss, obviously, who's a tight end. But both of those guys are pros for sure. And you have at least three offensive linemen that are pros. You have Joe Burrow, who's the number one overall pick for a reason. You have Edwards-Hilaire, who is a stud, is a running back and can both catch and run out of the backfield.
As we saw.
I just looked at it and I was like, look, Clemson is a good defense. They have an alien in Isaiah Simmons, but like, there is no way that they can stick with this. And like, Brent Venables, he came in with an awesome game plan even. And it didn't matter. It
doesn't
matter.
It
did not matter.
Talent
they
wins.
Still dropped 42 in 48 minutes.
Talent wins, and in college football, the thing that where you want most of your talent is on the defensive line. I maintain that defensive lines win college football games. I've maintained it for years. And
well, like, that's not even where LSU's talent is on the defense.
No, but this is another thing where people are getting anchored to this notion of Clemson always has NFL caliber defensive linemen, and like, yeah, they do, but they're not going to have like four first round picks on their defensive line like they had last year. Like, I just didn't see a circumstance where they were going to really fuck up what Joe Burrow wanted to do. Whereas with LSU, they just have some big hefties. They're going to stop the run to whatever degree you can against Clemson and force Trevor Lawrence to throw it. Maybe he'll burn you, but I thought that he would burn the LSU defense less than Joe Burrow would burn the Clemson defense. It was just a big mismatch there. If it really did come down to quarterbacks, as it seems so many big games in this day and age do, give me Burrow over Lawrence, considering who they're going against every day of the week.
Yeah, like, you can't throw it near Stingley, because he's just a total fucking monster. You don't want to throw it at Fulton, because he's a first-round pick. Delpit has been, like, kind of a sneaky mess this year, but it kind of doesn't matter. Like, he's still, at worst a top 40 pick, let's say. Let's even say, like, his stock, like, plummets into the second round. The Vincent guy is pretty good. Like, I don't know where they were going to get – like, I get that Justin Ross and T. Higgins are studs, but, like, on some level, it's just too hard to gain separation against all of those guys consistently. And then you're asking Trevor Lawrence to, like, put it right on the numbers every time. And I love Trevor Lawrence. I think he's going to be the number one overall pick in 2021, but, like, he hasn't shown that ability yet.
No, he would have had to have the best game of his career in order to keep that game close. There was just a massive talent disparity, which is something that sounds strange. I also took into account, the fact that LSU is super battle tested going into this game. They're playing at home, essentially. They had beaten and how it was many a home top game. 10 teams? I don't how many top 10 teams? And I watched Clemson, who, unless Lawrence, had probably something close to his best game ever, to beat Ohio State. Like, who else did they beat? I mean, they had struggled in games this year. I know Dabo Swinney is always like, oh, you know, no one respects us. It's like, dude, I don't know what you were doing that, you know, demands yeah. respect. I don't hold on to old teams. You had a brand new team this year, as everybody does, and you have to win on those merits. You have a great quarterback. You certainly have great players, but you know, ACC doesn't battle test you the same way the SEC does. And you saw that, I thought, when, you know, Clemson goes up early and LSU is just like, yeah, we got this. We're fine. And just Man, rolls.
I'm so out on Dabo Swinney at this
I'm so
stage.
Out, too. Like, I mean, listen, it works, and you can okay, create your own realities through gaslighting, sure. but fuck him.
Yeah, like, I'm not sitting here saying, like, he's a bad coach. Like, he's very clearly
no,
an incredible coach.
He's outstanding, outstanding yeah. coach.
But he I'm just, out on
I,
him.
I disagree with his tactics.
It's I mean, it's just like the constant playing the victim card in the media. It's the fact that he was like, I would quit my job tomorrow if we paid players. Oh, like
what I wouldn't give for that moment.
It's just all such a fucking act to me. And like, I don't
You
I don't
can get away
with
this shit in college football, man. I mean, that's something that's been proved time and time again over the last couple of years. Like, the college football media is so generally thirsty. And I think David Roth put it, like, they are so wanting as for any any character whatsoever from one of these college football coaches that they completely overlook the fact that they're either complete lunatics or, like, gym teachers. Like, there's just not – like. We don't do this in any other sport. We don't create these cults of personalities around, like, Kyle Shanahan, who's clearly very good at his job as an NFL head coach. I mean, Belichick earned it and wanted nothing to do with it. It's this ultimate power that these coaches have in small, mid-sized markets where the teams are far and away the biggest thing that they have going. Like, Clemson's the biggest thing in Greenville, South Carolina, which is a metropolitan area on par with, like, Las Vegas. So, of course, he is treated like an emperor, and everyone has to just roll with whatever nonsense he says. But it's still complete fucking nonsense that it's some small-town gaslight Trumpian nonsense, and I'm over it.
Yeah, like, I'm over this cult of personality kind of thing. Like, I was watching the Coach's Room last night, obviously, because I'm a nerd, the LSU Clemson game, and I was just
and you have good taste.
Well, I was just struck by Jeff Hafley. Like, Hafley was just sitting there, like, consistently, constantly, just, like, breaking down the personnel advantages on the field, like, immediately upon the play being called. He just has, like, that NFL mentality that I think I like more. And it's just, like, guys like that. I mean, like, I would rather listen to that than listen to this cult of personality bullshit stuff.
But think about what sells in those markets in those regions. I mean, you have mega churches, you got a bunch of stuff. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get a whole bunch of people telling, like, you know, don't be coming at our way of life. But, like, I've lived down there. I know how this goes, and there's always – you call it a chip on the shoulder. It could also be called the victim mentality, but just in the general southeast of this country, there is this no one listens to us stuff, and maybe there's some validity to it, but they prey on this tribalistic nonsense, and you couldn't even try that shit in the NFL. You'd be ruined by every media base, and even the fan bases would get after you for being just like a kook because they're big markets and people smell bullshit in big markets.
And it's something I talk about with the NBA versus college basketball coaches all the time. Like, and the same goes for college football versus the NFL. The players are more important in the NFL than they are in college. In college, because there's such quick turnover, the coach is more important, realistically, to creating a culture and creating year-over-year success. But in the NFL, that shit just isn't the case. Like, the talent level is too flat. There are too many good players. So I think that it comes back to this thing where, like...
Do you think that's the same NBA and college basketball right now? Because it does seem as if...
I mean, look at John Beilein right now. Like, it's... And, like, there are a lot of college basketball coaches that I think are much better about it, especially some of the younger college basketball coaches I know. Like, they're starting to take on more of, like, a professional mindset as opposed to, like, the college dictatorial mindset. But,
yeah,
I mean, a lot of those, like, you know, 50s, 60s, you know, I don't mean to go like all okay boomery on these guys. And like, I like some of them. Like, I know some of them personally. Like, I don't dislike a lot of these guys, but like, they are very
cult of personality.
Yeah, they're very cult of personality. They are very my way or the highway. It's
can that shit play in this day and age? Because you see in the NBA, it's already lost. In the NBA, it's lost. Like, the coaches are almost meaningless. But in college, it almost feels like with the one and done rules as is, that you kind of almost have to, you know, be a player's coach from day one. I mean, what's Arizona's Twitter handle? Like a player's program or something?
Well, I think that it's that, and I think that like just transferring also has created a situation where you can no longer be actively disliked anymore.
Yeah, I just don't know if there's that much of a gap. I think basketball has proven itself from top to bottom to be just a player-led game, whereas in football you can still make the argument, and I would, that it's a team-led game. And while talent absolutely matters, and he who has the most talent usually wins, like, you do need some cohesion. You do need some unification, and there is a with the level of physicality that the sport has, you need to have some leaders of men and real belief in those rooms. Otherwise, you're kind of shit out of luck. So I don't know, but there's definitely a difference in how NFL coaches and college coaches handle themselves, and it's not if you were to ask somebody in a vacuum who doesn't know anything about it, which one would be more, you know, dictatorial, like, they'd be like, oh, NFL coaches, they're at a much higher level. Wrong. I mean, it couldn't be a bigger difference, and I find it to be repulsive.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Like, I'm out on these dudes that are just so absurd about, like, this cult of personality bullshit, this my way or the highway stuff. Like, I don't need that in my life. Like, it's just
like, I'm also out on, like, Mike Leach. Like, Mike Leach,
I'm a little bit out on Mike Leach, yeah.
Like, Mike Leach is problematic. Like, I can appreciate it that he doesn't, you know, kowtow to anybody or whatever. Like, that's cool. Like, I got no problem with that. And oh, man, a little bit of quirk goes a long way in college football. Holy shit, does it go a long way. But this notion of just like, oh, Mike Leach is going to be great. He's exactly what Mississippi State wants. It's like, dude, I've watched his teams. Like, he's going to get his ass kicked.
It really helps that, like, a lot of college media in general is, like, 40 and over, to be honest. Like, and this is something I've talked about a lot. Like, to be honest, like, I entered college media whenever I started because I saw, like, a massive opening in the marketplace. Like, I was like, oh, I can just, like, talk about things that are happening on the field or on the court and talk about things from an analytical perspective, because nobody does that. Everyone just looks for these fun, quirky stories, and everyone looks for you know, these cult of personality guys. And,
have you been reading these ESPN, like, they'll go and they'll, like, try to get, like, the oral history of this coaches, and I can't remember who posted it on Twitter. I think it was a former Deadspin writer who's just like, all of these ESPN cult of personality, like, college coach oral histories are just like a compilation of the most milquetoast, boring fucking stories ever, where it's like, man, he really likes cereal. One time he ate a whole bowl of cereal, like, right in front of me. And it's just like, Jesus Christ. And you read them and you can't unhear. Like, how does anyone think this shit is interesting? This person's not interesting. Why are we trying to make them interesting?
Yeah, like, I just can't. I'm not intrigued by that. And I guess that some people are. And I think that, you know, college sports in general, despite the fact that it should theoretically, like, refurbish itself with new fans every year, right?
Like, no. Yeah, in theory, but
like,
not
you,
really.
You gain how many? You gain literally millions of new college students every year that should be excited to root for their team. But, like, I feel like this audience is aging. Like, I feel like the college sports audience in general is aging.
I agree with you. I mean, honestly, I don't think it has very much. We are in a bit of a bubble, having moved out to California, and California doesn't give a shit. They just don't give a shit.
But, like, I was even
football.
Just back in Pittsburgh, where, like, look, Penn State is still a thing over there. To an extent, Ohio State matters. You know, West Virginia matters there a lot. Pitt matters there a lot. But it's not the same as when I was a kid. Like, it just isn't.
No, it really isn't. It just doesn't resonate as much. I honestly think a lot of that has to do with how boring the games are. I mean, Jesus Christ, with the clock stopping after every first down, and then everybody running basically homogenized modified air raid. Like it's pretty rough to watch some of these. I mean, last night's game took like 4.5 hours. It was egregious.
It wasn't great. But yeah, no, it's the stuff.
But if you're old, you got nothing but time.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I really think that we need like a bit of an influx of good young writers who don't take bullshit. And so much of the college stuff is transactional too, in a way.
100%.
Like it's like that in pro sports. Look, I'm not going to be
absolutely, but
that.
You have.
But like,
but it's
different in college.
It's such a wild west, and so what happens is you get. I did this professionally for years. I was pretty good at it too. You have assistant coaches, you have coaches that are on the up, and they're just on the phone all day. They're always cruton. And you know, as a media member, who you know 9 times out of 10 you're just getting shit. I mean, you're just getting shit on because people are tribalistic, and you know, if you ever criticize anything. You don't want it. So then you have a coach or somebody who is going to feed you some information for their own benefit, or an agent who's going to, you know, coach's agent who's going to feed you some information for the benefit or some cruton advantage so that you can tweet it out and they can get 1 degree of separation in a world where, frankly, let's just stop pretending. You know, you feel good. You're like, oh, man, you know, I'm getting validated here. And it's just, yeah, it's extremely transactional. Everybody has nefarious goals. Nefarious is strong, but like everybody has an alternate angle to everything because they're all just looking to move up. Whereas you have guys in the NFL who are just like, I'm cool with being a D-line coach. I'm never going to be a D coordinator. I'm making $600,000 a year or whatever. Like, I'm good. I don't have to go recruiting. I don't have to do shit. I just have to coach these guys up. I get to talk all ball all the time. That's all I want to do. And some of these college guys, like, honestly, they're pretty shitty coaches, but they're really good at recruiting, so they constantly have jobs, and they're just constantly just selling themselves to people in one way or another and you know, making friends and, you know, winning through the power of positive thinking. It is a messy, weird world out there in the college football landscape. And, yeah, you're right. It can prey upon the young, and a lot of the old guys are so in bed with everybody, you know, 10 times over that it doesn't matter, including ADs, where that gets to a really messy situation that we won't dive into here. But, man, like it – you're 100% right. Like, if people could just talk ball, that would be way more interesting. But instead, it's about everything other than ball. And then you don't have any context for when you watch the game. And you're like, this game kind of sucks. So why do I care?
I think that this leads interestingly into what we wanted to talk about today. There was, you know, kind of an interesting thing that
it was something. It was, yeah, it interested us for sure. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's
SLC fair. Dunk, the SB Nation Utah Jazz blog, who let's be real about it, like that website in general does look for things to be a little bit outraged about in regard to like,
the Utah fan base getting outraged over a national media thing. Never.
But, like, generally, I think that, like, it, you know, they do interesting stuff, and I think that this is a case
where they try.
This idea is intriguing to me. So they went through and tracked from, what is it, it's like 20 different Twitter accounts, the common words, highlights, hashtags, number of tweets, number of retweets, and number of likes, and then created a search that related to every player, their nicknames, Twitter handles, corresponding teams, etc., and then like brought it back to the corresponding teams, and then created like a data for it, basically saying these are the teams that are getting tweeted about most, that are getting retweeted about most, that are getting the most likes on Twitter, etc., right? And what their conclusion is, and I think that this is where I would disagree personally with this stuff, is that, and it's because they have only done this over 9 days so far. They started on January 4th, 2020. And it's just a small sample right now. But the thing that's 100%. Interesting is it seems like they are going to continue to update it hourly, day by day, basically, like for the rest of the season. And that part of it, once we get a lot more data, is going to be interesting, I think. Right now, their case is that if you look here, the Lakers, the 76ers, and the Hawks all get way more engagement than anyone else in the NBA, and that is a problem.
Working out for the Hawks, eh?
Basically. Like, it's a problem because people are influencers are chasing retweets and likes, basically, and only talking about them at the expense of other teams. Well, I think that, like, yeah, it's obvious that this is happening because, of course, journalists are going to chase the most interesting stories. But yeah. I guess that what I think it does raise an interesting question of is, do you think that the NBA media is too biased toward trying to chase the interesting story instead of being, or trying to chase the obvious story at the expense of trying to create something that is more interesting?
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? Trying to make money, right? If you want to create a socialist republic to which every team gets equal coverage, go ahead. That's fine. That's a good idea. I'd be all for it. I'd probably subscribe, but that's just not how this world works.
But I don't want it to work that way either. Like, I think that there's space for more conversation about certain teams, but I also don't want it to be just about, like, you know, all 30 teams equally getting the most coverage. Like, I think that's kind of absurd, to be honest.
There's two different thoughts I have on this. One, Twitter is a terrible representation of the real world, and people who try to conflate those two only expose themselves for being in the hive mind that is Twitter. Like, NBA Twitter doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whatsoever.
We disagree slightly on that, for what it's worth.
Yeah,
but
we've had a much longer conversation. Go on back. You can listen to it all.
But in general, I agree with the point that you're about to make, where you're going to say it matters much less than what some people think it does.
100%. If your entire argument is predicated on Twitter accounts, I think that that is a foolhardy exercise. Now, I'm not saying that Twitter accounts shouldn't be part of a larger viewpoint towards this, but, like, you actually have to go where people are. And the NBA fan base, if it was solely people who are constantly commenting on Twitter, people who are part of quote unquote NBA Twitter, they wouldn't make enough money to have 30 franchises, just period. It's not a lot. It's what, 2% of the population is an active user on Twitter? 2% of 300 million? Like, you know, that's why NBA ratings are down. Maybe it's focused too much on Twitter and NBA fits and shit like this, and we don't actually talk about the game. We talk about, you know, the soap opera that happens because we can comment on it easier. That is a media problem on top of that, and that's the second point. I wish we could live in an environment to where media companies felt comfortable enough where they could take an L, quote unquote, on, you know, a story that doesn't get that many reads, and that they can devote resources to sort of the journalistic principle of this is interesting and people should know about it. But that's just not the world we live in. And that sucks. It really does. But that's on people for not buying it, and for media for not being able to adapt to the way that people consume shit. And again, I honestly think that if there is such a fervor over the disproportionate amount of likes and retweets for the Lakers, the Sixers, and I guess the Hawks, I was unaware that the Hawks had such a rabid fan base. Maybe just Trae Young does cool shit all the time, and people like his stees.
Well, I think
same thing with Orlando getting some buzz. It's like, because everyone,
well, no,
like,
this is
curiosity about Markel Fultz.
This is where I'll get into why I think the small sample of this creates problems for the conclusions made here. So Orlando, for instance, right? Orlando just had a ton of, like, lower level roster movement over the course of the last 9 days. Jonathan Isaac and Al-Farouq Aminu, they just announced that they're going to try and get disabled player exceptions for both of those guys, thus essentially holding them out for the year. And Markel Fultz is, like, doing things in an interesting way, right? So yeah. I think that on some level, because we're in such a small sample, same with Atlanta. Atlanta's going through a bunch of turmoil right now with the coaching and with the way that they're playing and with the way that players seem to be responding to the coaching. Like, there's a lot happening there. And that's why I think that once we get into a bigger sample of data, it could legitimately be pretty interesting to see what these findings are, but we're not there yet. Nonetheless, that's why I think it's kind of an interesting idea.
It's no question an interesting idea. I just don't like the conclusion. I don't like that we're drawing conclusions off of it, and I also don't like that the conclusions are clearly a confirmation bias thing. Towards no one cares about small markets. Like, if it was somebody other than a Utah Jazz fanboy site putting this out there, maybe I'd lend it a little bit more credence. But they're just creating data that confirms it. And listen, if they go long term, I bet they'll find the same thing. People are going to want to retweet and like shit about the Lakers. The Lakers are one of the best teams in the NBA. They have LeBron fucking James. They added another top five player. And they're good again. And they were also the NBA's marquee brand, who is having a resurgent season after a couple of really shitty years. Like that it's just natural that they were going to they were going to have a lot of interest about them.
The Lakers were always going to blow this away. Like 100%.
The Lakers are a dominant force. They're the fucking Yankees. And with the Sixers, you have a team that no one knows what to make of, but they are a squad that is in a major market. At least they're the strongest Northeast team right now, I would argue. They're better established than the Celtics. The Celtics don't have a top flight superstar, a guy who's got his own sneakers and shit right now. They play more of a team branded basketball game. And listen, everything's just SEO, right? People don't search Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker's awesome. They might search the Celtics, but you need both in this day and age. And Joel Embiid does stupid shit on Twitter. And Ben Simmons is, you know, dated a Kardashian for a while. Like, these guys are in the air of popular culture for whatever reason. And they're also just a confounding basketball team. So it doesn't surprise me, but the notion, and listen, and I'm all for pushing up, you know, why don't we talk about the Bucks more, this and that? Well, I'd like to also give some deference to the media companies for being like, we try to talk about the Bucks. You all don't give a shit. I mean, it's one of these things I'm doing right now. Warriors were the bread and butter for years for me. I mean, I could write anything I wanted about the Warriors and it would dominate, absolutely dominate. When it came to page views and interactions, and it was just like we were printing cash over the Mercury News over Warriors coverage. But they suck now, and it's the Bay Area, and the Bay Area doesn't fuck with suck. But the 49ers are good, so what are we doing? I'm at 49ers every goddamn day. I'm not going to go and just be like, here's an interesting story about the Warriors, because no one cares about the Warriors right now. They're in the back of everybody's mind, and if they get good again or Steph comes back, that will change. But ultimately, you got to go to where the money is. There's just not enough money to where you can go where the story is anymore. It's just not how it works. And the notion that everyone's just haphazardly throwing it at stuff, maybe that exists in some places, but it's just not this wonderful utopia where every team is going to get equal respect and equal value and all this stuff. Like, this is a media landscape, and the goal is to make money through interactions or whatever. I'm not sure how that works, but clearly the goal is to get as many people to interact as possible. And you're going to go to the bread and butter places when that's the case. And you also size the 9 to really find out where that bread and butter is.
So, yeah, I will push back slightly on that view of it.
All ears.
Like, I do think that social media teams, that brands in general, could do a better job of trying, right?
Agreed.
Like,
agreed.
I actually, like you said, that like you give them credit for trying sometimes. Like, I actually don't know that they do, to be honest.
Okay.
Like, I think that a lot of them go straight to the same well a lot of the time and know that it'll be successful, and that's fine.
That's fair. They're not, you know, listen, it's also, let's be realistic about what we're dealing with here. Social media isn't exactly number one priority on most editorial charts, and it's not where the majority of brain power is. Now, that's changing to certain degrees, and there are very smart people that work in this, but it's usually lower-level salary people doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, especially at night, you know, like 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night, Alex Caruso does something, and it's like, well, shit, you know, fuck it. If I have a retweet quota or something, like, I'm not going to not do this. Like, I'm not going to not, you know, take the easy money when it's there. And, you know, what's the incentive to try in something that is so abstract in terms of the capitalistic upside, as opposed to if you, you know, basically I, the way I see it is most of the time it's just used as an augmentation to an overall content strategy where you can say, oh, well, you know, you want to do business with us because we also got X amount of retweets, or, you know, we amplify all of our shit. Like, you just need to get those numbers up, in the words of Matthew McConaughey and The Wolf of Wall Street. And so I just don't know if why we're putting so much stock into it. And you're probably right. They probably don't try as hard as they could. But I maybe this is just me protecting my own ass. Like, I would I would generally err on the side of, you know, Hanlon's razor, as per usual. Never attribute to malice what could be explained by stupidity. I don't think that necessarily they're out, you know, like, let's make sure that no one knows about these Milwaukee Bucks. Let's make sure that we never tweet anything about them. I think that they probably tried, no one gave a shit, and so they went back to the well. And maybe they asked to go back to the well, but, like, the well's the well. And this ain't a game where, you know, everyone gets to feel good at the end of the day. This is a game where they're, you know, trying to make as much money, as abstract as it is, as possible. And why would you fuck around with that?
Well, and I think that a big thing that you see, for instance, with Milwaukee is that they essentially brought back the same team from last year.
Like, they're a known entity.
I don't know what new interesting angle that there is right now to write about Milwaukee.
No.
I'd be interested. Like, I probably at some point should write about Giannis taking threes and if he's done something specifically different with his shot mechanics, right? Like,
and Sam, I could have told you months ago that was a great story. In fact, I did, and here we are.
God damn it! but like, that's a one-off story, and I just don't really see a sustained world where that is. You can keep coming up with new angles over the course of 2 years for a team that is, for all intents and purposes, like, look, they added Kyle Korver, they added Robin Lopez, right? Like, yeah. But for all intents and purposes,
looks exactly
it's the same
like
group.
His fucking brother. No one notices the difference when either of them are on the court, by the way. I mean, obviously they play differently, but
and
it's not
hair.
Like there's a vision. Yeah, but like, it's Lopez, they look more or less the same. You just, if you're not paying that much attention, as most people aren't, you're like, oh, that guy plays a lot. Yeah. It's in fact two. He's parent trapping us. But it's
like, but like it's, Portland, it's the same deal, right?
But, like, Portland sucks.
Portland's not very good right now. But, like, Sacramento, yeah. Same deal. They basically brought back the same group of guys.
Who is new and who is fun and who is cool? Because, listen, if you would have done this a year ago, it would have been Warriors by a mile. And so what's new? What's different? What's cool? The Lakers are new. That's a new thing. Oh, yeah, they're also, you know, one of the best teams in the NBA. Let's also take into account that some teams play into this and some teams don't. The Sixers, for all, I mean, they are a very social media buzzy team. I mean, they have their one star is out there in a passive way doing it. One star in a very active way is out there being very much online. And no one knows what to make of them, so there's a built-in curiosity there. They got the Eastern Seaboard interest. They're always on TNT. There's a play there. Like, I can see why there's an interest in that team. I wouldn't have necessarily guessed it, but now that the data's to whatever, you know, it's worth is out there, I go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. On the flip side, you know, Milwaukee, Giannis wants nothing to do with the media machine. And I think credit to him. I think he's right in that regard. But, geez, like, they're not even playing into it in the least bit. And they're in Milwaukee. And as much as I love Milwaukee as a city, let's not pretend that Milwaukee is some hub of culture and influence in this country. And, you know, you look around the league, like the Clippers play in L.A. They're new. They're different. Now, mind you, their stars are sitting out on a fairly frequent basis, and that seems to be the narrative around them. But they don't change the narrative in another way. I mean, they're not a social media savvy team. Kawhi Leonard is the antithesis of that. And when you have a star that doesn't want to be a star, like Giannis to a certain degree, and certainly like Kawhi Leonard, that doesn't help. Because people like stars. This is all People Magazine, Us Magazine nonsense on social media. So why are we pretending as if it's ridiculous that reclusives and introverts aren't selling?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like...
Go ahead.
We can have... There's bigger conversations to be had about how the league markets itself and how the league brands itself and what the right balance is.
And, like, I think that there's a real case to be made for, you know, something that I know Ethan Strauss has written about and, you know, Dave Dufour
and
Roy DeKeel.
I agree with all those guys. I'm in their camp.
They go to bat for marketing the game itself better. Mm-hmm. And if
100%.
You move toward that, you are organically going to move toward... Hey, Utah has won, I think it's 14 of their last 15 or 16 games. Why are they doing it?
Yeah.
How are they doing it? Boom.
Give me a reason to give a shit. Give me a reason to give a shit. And ultimately, the NBA regular season just seems to matter less and less, and the teams are more transparent about that, too. And the league doesn't do anything to counteract that.
Yeah. I would like to see the NBA move toward a more substantive discussion about the game. And I understand that, like, for instance, and, like, this is something I think the NFL does really well. I think that they always have color commentators on that are really good at breaking down defenses, right? Like Tony Romo, even like Troy Aikman, 100%. Chris Collinsworth, these guys. And
they
like,
build up the other side of the ball.
Yeah, those three are probably the three best right now in terms of color commentary, right? Like, they certainly
that
have the biggest jobs in color commentary.
Helps
other than
they have good that they have good color commentators on the Sunday games, and we'll see if they can fix that on Monday night. Like, it helps that people know those guys, respect those guys, and that those guys bring it. Like,
do we
that's
think
a
it helps
deal.
That Booger has been such a disaster for ESPN?
That it helps. I mean, I think it's hindered. I think that no one watches so that this guy can blather about it. I don't think that you should pay Tony Romo $10 million a year because I don't think anyone's tuning in to hear what Tony Romo has to say about anything. At least with
it's like a value add versus something that matters, right?
No, Tony Romo gets you back to basics. He gives you a competent, solid, rock solid, professional, critically acclaimed broadcast. Great. You need a little bit of razzle dazzle. I think McAfee would be the play if you need to recreate John Gruden for McAfee.
Man, I really thought Booger was not a disaster that first year. I actually thought he was.
Oh,
like,
it got so bad year two. You're right. Booger was actually the better of the two year one.
Yeah, and I thought he's even better than Tess because like Tess has like a weird. I don't know that Tess
has
is
too much
for...
energy. There's not enough magisterialness to him. He doesn't. He seems too excited. That's a college football. I'm trying to sell this on you, as opposed to the NFL, which is I'm trying to explain this. I'm trying to help you out. We're just buddies. There's a very. It kind of goes back to the difference between college and NFL coaches. One of them has to be flash and razzle dazzle and Joel Osteen, and the other one is just like I'm about ball, baby. And if you're here, you're about ball too.
I actually really like Tess on like 90% of things. I just don't know that this
Tess is the best.
Quite for
Tess
him.
Is the best, but this is not good.
Yeah, like I think that there's just a better way to go about using him. Maybe
who would you keep? Let's go with my Pat McAfee as color commentator angle, and I think you probably have to bring in a quarterback too, just to kind of counteract all of the McAfee-ness. But who would be a good, solid professional? You know, has a voice, feels like big game announcer, but it doesn't have the excitability because you can only have so much excitability. Let McAfee handle that. Who would
I think
be a good play-by-play guy?
Is really good.
Yeah, he is really good.
Pash does Cardinals games too, so like he's not just like the guy who deals with Bill Walton all the time. Like he is a guy that really knows football.
I just don't like Pash on a personal level.
Why?
He's just kind of a dick.
I don't know. He's never done anything but kind to me.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, maybe he's just projecting what I'm throwing his way. I don't know. I've run into him like twice. It started well, and then I'm just like, ooh, you just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, dude.
No, I think Dave's really good at his
uppity-ness.
Job. Yeah, and maybe that doesn't quite work for a national audience in the NFL, but like, I think Dave's really good. He has experience. If you're going to go with McAfee, he has experience dealing with something that's different, right?
Yeah. Nobody's better suited to deal with Pat McAfee than Dave Pash. Should be a fucking promotion for him. He'd have to deal with less childishness.
Right. And actually like I like Pash with Bill Walton and
he's
like
fantastic.
I said, like,
he knows exactly how to handle it.
I think Pash is actually really good. In terms of quarterback, you're going to say like Romo and McAfee, but if it's Romo, bringing in a second guy, right?
The problem is that I actually like Matt Hasselbeck in the booth on Thursday nights with McAfee, but their voice sounds almost the exact same, which is problematic for a booth, and it works fine on a Thursday night AAC game, but here we are. That's tough. You'd want a quarterback expert, right? Some guy who's going to break down offense and defense, and then you keep McAfee in as sort of comic relief. And people, I think, would tune in generally to just somebody doing something a little different. Like, the cool part about Gruden was that he could give you both. He would say some ridiculous, funny stuff every now and again because he's John fucking Gruden, and he's unaware that people are actually listening to what he is saying. But, he also do an outstanding breakdown, and he'd super nerd out about football. I don't know who would be a good quarterback. I don't think Donovan McNabb's done a good enough job in any of his broadcasting endeavors to do it. You're also looking for, you know, someone who's not another white guy, which is, you know, probably just for the sake of audience retention. You probably don't want three white guys in a booth. So I don't know how we got down this path. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to think of – I mean, the white whale is Philip Rivers, right?
Really? I don't know, man. Philip, I don't know if you could do 16 straight weeks of Philip.
I think he'd be pretty exceptional. I'm not gonna
the white whale is, I don't disagree with you. I would want to hear him in a Fox booth or a CBS booth for a year or two just to make sure. You know, Peyton Manning is the white whale. I mean, Peyton Manning's like naturally funny. I don't know if he's that funny. I don't know if he'd actually bring anyone in, but like Peyton Manning would be ridiculously good. I mean, he'd be so fucking good at it that you couldn't do it. Same way that Kobe Bryant would be immediately the best color commentator in the NBA.
Yeah, because Kobe just wouldn't take shit from anyone.
Kobe just wouldn't play around. He would put in a tremendous amount of work into, you know, knowing the ins and outs of everything that was happening. So he would educate, and he would also, you know, it doesn't hurt that he's Kobe Bryant and he has a cult of personality. I mean, if Barkley wanted to put more effort into actually, if he had to, he doesn't have to, so he won't. If he wanted to put more effort into the X's and O's of the game and shit and actually, you know, adapt to the year 2020, he'd be outrageous because he's hilarious. But it's hard to find both. It's really hard to find both, and I think that in this day and age, you have to have it. You have to have it. Otherwise, it's just milk toast, and that's fine. You can be totally competent.
Okay,
and
here's one. Dave Pasch, Pat McAfee, and Lewis Riddick.
Yeah, yeah. You can swing it as defensive guy. Yeah. I do think that the quarterback is – listen, you're not going to get me to say no to that. I'm all in on that. I thought Lewis was fucked over the last time around because Lewis is the best commentator ESPN has regarding football right now, straight
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I said it.
I would want somebody in there to be able to break down the nuance of quarterback play, though, because it is so vitally important to the game of football itself in this day and age. And I don't know if Lewis can provide that. And so now the question is, I don't know if Lewis can hold it. I don't know if he can hold it on his own. Now, maybe if they could teach Lewis to do play-by-play. No. Huh. I'm going to have to think on this one, Sam. This is a rabbit hole that I don't know if I'm going to get out of anytime soon. I like it, though. That's the leader in the clubhouse.
Anyway, though, we've got this conversation here about the NBA.
Oh, really?
And
okay,
cool. I think that we can just kind of leave it as it is. Right.
Like, yeah. Let's see what more sample size. Let's see what a larger sample size does, and let's maybe, you know, I'll tone it down a little bit and not worry so much about what's going on Twitter. And maybe we, you know, again, as I said, I'm in the camp of the Strausses and the Moes and the Dave DeFores, where it's just like, let's talk about the excellence of the game, and maybe not bitch and whine so much about ratings and Twitter and stuff. Maybe let's practice what we preach.
Well, what it is I think that the NFL does a better job of getting more attention on their smaller markets, I would say.
Yeah, the NFL will always have a market advantage, in the fact that they only play on Sundays, really.
Well, do you want to know what I think the big thing is? Fantasy football is certainly one of the big things, but I really think that the biggest thing possible here is that every single weekend, every single game that a team plays is on network television as opposed to cable.
100%. And it's national. Everything is nationally broadcast, but locally broadcast too. So, yeah. Like, if you're a Packers fan in Milwaukee, it's on Fox pretty much every Sunday, unless it's that one weird week where you get the CBS game or you're on some nationally televised game. And you know, hey, I'm on a nationally televised game, Sunday Night Football, that's a thing. Monday Night Football, that's a thing. You know what channels those are on. It just has a much wider reach. Though, you know, at the same time, you're dealing with, you know, if the NBA put, you know, a Monday night game on ABC, right? Let's just say that they were able to swing that. Would it get the ratings? I don't know. I don't know which way the card is on this bad boy.
It's a good question. Well, the question is, would it get better ratings than like The Bachelor or something like
yeah.
that?
It's like, I mean, that's ABC's thing. Whereas the NFL, maybe we're past the point of no return in terms of crazed viewership. I mean, the NFL, you can put it on any night of the week on any channel and people are going to find it and they're going to consume the shit out of it. And if you make it easier for them, that's just printing cash. I mean, absolutely printing cash. I don't know how you're going to compete with, you know, full grown dudes run into each other as hard as they can. Like, at some point we have to reckon with America's
Bloodlust.
America's bloodlust. That's exactly right. And
but I really do think the fact that basically all NBA games are on cable TV versus all NFL games being on network TV is a big difference. It's legit just a massive thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll always go back to my same point, which is we don't have to pretend that the regular season matters all that much anymore, and so people don't, because there's a lot of other shit that you can do. And in an era of limitless things to consume, you have to create some juice to the thing. You got to create some excitement. You got to create something. And you're right on the national thing. You're taking into account, you know, how many national games are there a week. You're probably doing about 10, 12 out of 30 teams playing an average of 2-3 games a week. So the vast majority of games are on local TV. That's not ideal in a cable cutting world. People will not pick that up. I mean, that's a sacrifice that people are willing to make. And again, you know, it's just like, why do I want to watch regular season game number 60 out of 82 when it doesn't seem like the players give that much of a shit? And the NBA hasn't told me any reason that this game really matters. I mean, it just, unless you have a supernova franchise like the Warriors have been for the last couple of years or like the Lakers are right now, it just doesn't play. It doesn't pass the smell test, whereas in every game of an NFL season, you can create a narrative as to why it matters. And even they struggle with that sometimes. But you only have 16 of them at most, or at the least, and you know what day they're on, so, and pretty much what time they're on, too. So it's the NBA's got some things that they need to work out. As much as we've not shit on Adam Silver because David Stern died recently, I don't think that they have the right leadership to figure all this stuff out. I think that they have proven that their priorities lie in the wrong place and not want to take account of problems that they have in the day of, and they're trying to Band-Aid over with adding stuff in the future when I think they're in a position where they need to trim fat as opposed to add more meat to the bone. So we'll see how it goes. I'm very interested to see this data moving forward because, you know, if nothing else, it will rile people up and maybe people will talk about the NBA a little bit more. Maybe the only thing we have in this day and age is people bitching and complaining about how much the media doesn't care about their team.
Really is. That's it. People just like to complain about
100%.
The NBA not caring about their team. That's really
maybe we, maybe everybody's just Dabo Swinney out here, just bitching and complaining. Everyone's out to get just Dabo-ing left and right. Good luck to them. Good luck.
Is there anything else you want to talk about NBA wise? I don't know. Like it's kind of as we've kind of talked about here. It's kind of in that dead zone, right? Like
yeah,
and I talked about Chris Paul.
I'm really worried
last
about
week.
The six. Chris Paul's awesome. I'm so glad. I mean, listen, I can shit on Chris Paul plenty, and there's plenty to shit on him with, but the notion that he was somehow, like, washed was preposterous. He hadn't shown up to a couple of big games. He had a big injury. But I think we both kind of saw this coming with Oklahoma City to a certain degree, that, like, they would win the trade if for nothing else they got all those draft picks for Paul George, and then they get Shea, and he's really, really good. And I don't know if we – I think you've been higher on him significantly, you know, longer term. I think we both thought that he'd be a really good, maybe a fringe all-star guy, but he's starting to show that he might be a little bit more than that. I don't think he'll ascend to superstardom, but like Jesus Christ, I mean, if you can get a guy who's consistently going to, you know, earn all-star votes, that's really something to be proud of there. Like that's just a good basketball team. They're well coached. They know what they're about, and Chris Paul's out there looking for heads, and it's just like shit, you know. I'd watch that team. I'd get behind that team. That team makes the regular season matter to me a little bit. And maybe we need more teams like the Thunder who just are about this action from October until April. We'll see what happens, but I think they'll trade Gallinari just because you don't want to overcommit to a 7 seed, but I like watching them play. I think that they're really fun.
You were about to dive into Sixers words. Yeah, please.
Yeah, I'm kind of over them. I don't know. I feel like they need to shake some serious shit up. We went, the Horford thing, who could have seen that coming? But, you know, with Joel out, that will be an interesting – there'll be an interesting thing to see how it's reshuffled. Listen, I'll fully admit I'm anchored a little bit to a preseason prediction, but are we sure Brent is up for this? Are we sure that Brown's the man for the job here?
I'm starting to get a little bit worried. I think Brett is really good. But
I agree, but I think he might be in over his head with this team. I mean, this team is one hell of a weird puzzle. It's a weird one.
I think everyone would be a little bit in over their head. Like, I don't think this 100%. Is just like a Brett problem, but
100%. I don't think there's a long-term solution here, but I let me put it this way. I don't think that Brett is the problem, but I don't think he's the solution. And I think if you bring in somebody else, maybe just the act of having somebody else being the head coach of this team could spark some unity, because that seems to be what this team really lacks on the court. They don't seem to have an identity at all. And other than, like, we're really good at defense when we commit ourselves to that end. But now they're so focused on trying to get their offense working, their defense sort of has slipped a little bit. And it's like, I think they'll be fine in the long run. I don't know if that voice is going to be able to transcend the muckiness that is on this team that I don't necessarily think is his fault, but ultimately it is his problem to solve. And again, I don't think he's the man for that job. Whoever comes in next, if the team stays more or less the same, they're probably not long for the job either. But you got to take the short-term gain while you can, because this team has a very open championship window.
I think that's right, but I still think that they're a move away. I still think they're a move away from a championship.
What do you think that move? What is that move? What have you extrapolated out in your mind? Because I don't think like an Alec Burks fixes this.
No. Like, I think it's moving Horford for something substantial.
Substantial at the wing position or point guard position?
For me, it's a point guard, but realistically, I think you could say anything. Like, any perimeter player, right? Like, I think as long as they can, you know, dribble a little bit and shoot. But for me, it's a point guard. Like, the deal that I floated is Al Horford plus stuff for Chris Paul. But
yeah, I don't think Oklahoma City's going to do it.
Yeah. Like, you could do, like, Al Horford and maybe, like, Al Horford for, like, Goran Dragic and something.
Man, that's tough goings, too, especially with Miami. I mean, some of the teams that we thought would be in a position, kind of a no man's land spot where they might want to make a move, they've exceeded expectations, at least, you know, probably external expectations. I don't know about internal, but like, it'd be hard for the Heat to move off Dragic now. I understand that they could probably survive, but like, shit, I mean, they're looking at the East and going like, why not us? So it'd be hard for them to move off their point guard. And I don't think Derrick Rose or somebody like that does shit for.
But like, Dragic isn't like really playing super well, I guess. Like, I
agree with you.
Goran is like their guy, maybe.
Do you think that the Sixers would be willing to make a trade with the Heat again?
Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how those.
I don't think that's what's worked out.
Elton Brand is a very very affable guy.
Like, Goran shoots 40% from three. Like, he's averaging like 16 points. He'd be very good as a pick and roll weapon next to Simmons. Like, I think that that's like kind of an interesting fit.
Isn't it so weird that last night I was thinking, you know, what the Sixers could use is some more TJ McConnell. That's something that legitimately crossed my mind.
Yeah. I mean, they could use another point guard for sure.
Yeah. I'm legitimately flummoxed as to who it would be. There's not a lot of – it doesn't seem like we've made that much progress at the point guard position. Like, it always seems as if there's like four or five teams that are just a point guard away, and maybe they rotate a little bit. But, you know, it still seems to be the same four or five – you know, about four or five teams that still just need a point guard. And I think it might have to be more dramatic. I don't know what Al Horford gets you right now. I don't know who's really clamoring for some Al Horford time. And, you know, that's a real sell low situation for the Sixers. I don't think that they're in that business. I think that they might be wrong, but I think that they think that they have many years of championship contention. So selling Al Horford now probably limits that long-term viability for them, and that's not good. It might be the truth of the matter, but, people lie to themselves in many ways.
Could Minnesota sell itself on Horford next to Towns and do Jeff Teague?
That literally read my mind there.
I don't love Jeff Teague, though.
That's why I said it'd be a real bad sell, though. I mean, you're going from Al Horford to Jeff Teague. I mean, that was your big free agent signing. That just doesn't play. Now,
yeah, I agree. It's hard to fix the Sixers.
There's one gentleman who I think might actually play.
Who?
His name is Russell, plays for the Warriors.
Yeah, but do you see that being a thing?
Yeah, I don't see it being a thing this year.
Yeah.
Now,
honestly, that is a fascinating move, because I think that Al would really fit in with the Warriors.
Yeah, or they could move him to another team and they can get, you know, a wing. But yeah, he would definitely fit in with the Warriors, who, you know, they think that they're pretty good at the center position. They've always undervalued the center position, if we're being totally honest. You know, let's also be realistic about what you're getting in Al Horford. You're getting an old dude. Now, maybe that fits in with the Warriors, who, when they get Clay and Steph, I mean, and probably Andre Iguodala back at the end of the – if Andre wants to play another year, he'll be back for the Warriors next summer. You know, and Draymond, who has – you know, I think he's like 30 years old, 29 years old, but has the body of a 40-year-old. You know, they're pretty old. They don't have that much longer to contend. So maybe that is the play, at least for a year, but – yeah, I think that there's something there. I just don't think that it happens at the trade deadline unless it's tremendous value for the Warriors and the Sixers aren't in a position. I just don't view the Sixers as irrational actors in this marketplace just yet. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I'm just not sure where this goes. I'm not going to lie to you.
I feel like they're going to waste a year. But I do. And so right now you have to think, well, okay, if we're going to keep this roster together, what do we do? How do we maximize it? Well, get rid of the coach. You know, it's kind of a shitty way to go about it. But if they've decided that we can't get a better roster than we have right now, then you have to get somebody to make the roster fit together than it does right now. It just is what it is. So I think that we are not too far away from real hot seat talk regarding that. But again, that's something that I predicted a long time ago, and I'm going to always err on the side of me being right if there's a possibility. So maybe my entire testimony should be thrown out of court.
All right, let's I don't know. Is
there
anything?
Talk Oscars at me. Talk Oscars.
Oh God, yes, yes. You've given me the floor on my own podcast to talk Oscars. This
that's
is what I needed.
How it works on your podcast when you bring me on.
Yes. Okay.
So what? Talk about snubs first, and then tell me who's going to win them.
No, so I want to talk about positives first, maybe.
Okay.
Let's go Ooh. There.
Ooh. Okay, fair enough.
Parasite, like, this is something unprecedented. Like, as someone who follows the Oscars and, like,
yeah.
really pays attention to this shit, right? Like, the fact that Parasite got 6 nominations and is in a relatively good position to potentially win Best Picture, that is incredible to me. It's my favorite movie of the year. I think it's the best movie of the year. I just watched it again on Sunday with Laura. And
yeah. Like, is it on on demand or anything right now?
Today it just went live to like rent on Amazon Prime.
Oh, that's great. I'll rent it. I haven't. Yeah. I wasn't able to get into San Francisco to see it, and I really did want to. So I will rectify that this week.
It's spectacular. I liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a lot.
Yeah.
I liked 1917 a lot. Like, I'm glad
Didn't
that those
see
ones
it.
Got a lot of nominations.
Is 1917 just like Dunkirk but earlier?
No. Very
oh, okay.
different in terms of film. Dunkirk is better, just straight up. Like, it's just
okay.
better. Dunkirk is also one of the most underrated movies of the last, like, decade, I think. I think it's exceptional in every way. The way that Nolan, like, messes with time, the way it's shot, everything about it, I think, is amazing. 1917 isn't quite that, but it's really
yeah.
quite exceptional, technically.
Okay.
What else is positive here? I mean, not a ton. I'm trying.
Okay, so tell me about the snubs then.
Joker getting 11 nominations is bad. The movie is bad.
Yeah.
It's morally bankrupt. I even think in terms of like what it's trying to say, like it's not saying what it's trying to say. Like it's bankrupt in terms of thought. Like it's not a smart movie, I don't think. It's nowhere near as smart as what Todd Phillips thought it was. I didn't think. It's a knockoff
yeah.
of Taxi Driver. It's like, it's not
yeah.
good, I don't think, at all. And, well, and I talked about this on the podcast earlier this year. Like, I did not like Joker at all.
It doesn't surprise me that a movie about the Joker thinks it's smarter than it actually is. It seems like that fits its audience perfect.
Yeah. So Little Women got 6 nominations.
Haven't seen it. You raved about it on Twitter.
I think it's an exceptional movie. I do think that Sony kind of fucked it up by releasing it so late
okay,
in the process. They released on Christmas. I think if they would have released in early December, and let it get ahead of steam, we'd be talking about it slightly differently. For Greta Gerwig to not be nominated for Best Director, there's so much going on in that movie, from set design, the way it's shot, shot composition, costume. The performances are all amazing. Like, there is so much going on in that movie, and for Greta Gerwig to not be nominated for director is kind of a joke to me.
Yeah, no, you, as you've said. And, I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, I'll take your word for it.
And in general, I think it's kind of a joke that there are no women nominated this year. And like, you, people will make the case, obviously, that it's a quality-based thing. And, you know, you can make a case that Lulu Wang and, you know, Greta Gerwig and X, Y, and Z, Marielle Heller for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is, like, just a fine movie, I think. All of these women finished 6th through 9th in the voting. And, you know, that's why they're not nominated. I think the problem is that the voting body is distinctly old, pale, male.
Yep.
To quote Siobhan from... Succession.
Yeah, from Succession. Yeah,
even though she said stale pale male, it's
also accurate.
It's just not very. It's not diverse enough, and to say that it is like ridiculous to me. And I think that that's why we've seen 6 female directors over the course of the entire history of the Academy Awards be nominated. That's just embarrassing, I think, especially in a year where there are so many strong female performances. Like, The Farewell doesn't get any nominations. The Farewell is astounding. Awkwafina is exceptional, and like, Lulu Wang directed an incredibly personal film that I think is absolutely amazing. I'm trying to think what else I didn't love here. Jennifer Lopez not getting nominated. That's another one. Film directed by a female. Exceptional performance by Jennifer Lopez as well. Like, I thought she should have won this category. And I have seen all of the performances in this category that are nominated other than Kathy Bates for Richard Jewell. And she was the best to me. It's between her and Florence Pugh, I would say. Laura Dern's going to win. Yeah, Laura Dern's going to win because Laura Dern is the past president of the Academy. And her performance is good in Marriage Story. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say it's bad, but... she's going to win, and it's going to be...
Politics are a hell of a play, man.
It's going to be a culmination of her career, and she is deserving of an Oscar at some point, so whatever.
Yeah. She gets to play Laura Dern, and everyone loves it.
She's literally playing... Do you watch Big Little Lies?
No, but I'm familiar. I've watched it on and off.
Yeah, she's literally playing, like, Lawyer Renata in Marriage Story. So...
I mean, listen, you know, if you got a role and you could ride it, read it. Who am I to judge on typecasting oneself?
I'm trying to think what else, if there's anything else.
Did you think Adam Sandler deserved a nomination?
So
I wasn't so sure on that.
I would have had him over a few of the actors in here. Like, I would have had him over Jonathan Pryce. I honestly, like, I think DiCaprio's performance in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is good. Like, it's not great to me.
Oh, really? I thought it was really good. I didn't even really care for that movie all that much, but I thought both him and Pitt were really good.
Yeah, like, I think Brad Pitt's amazing, and I think Brad Pitt should win Supporting Actor, but yeah, like, I think Leo's performance is just, like, solid and good. Like, I have no problem with him being nominated, but...
fair enough.
Like, I would take Sandler over him. I think Adam Driver should win this category.
For Marriage Story?
Yeah, and I actually didn't really love Marriage Story, but... Yeah. He's just amazing in it, in every way.
He real good at this acting thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else.
It
was a loaded category this year. Like, Eddie Murphy was really good in Dolomite Is My Name. Robert Pattinson.
No way he's winning.
Yeah, like, Robert Pattinson never got a sniff at this category, and he's amazing in The Lighthouse, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, there was just no chance. I still haven't seen Pain and Glory yet, though, and I guess that's, like, the one.
What's Pain and Glory?
It's this movie by Pedro Almodovar, who is a very famous Spanish director. And I guess that, like, Antonio Banderas plays this film director.
Oh, that's
who
the Banderas movie. Got it.
In his decline.
Cool.
I still haven't seen it yet, though. That's going to be a new one that's coming this week for me. I'm trying to think. I have other, like, lower category takes. Like, 1917 should be nominated for Best Editing, and I don't understand why it's not. But, like... Yeah. Do we need to get into the weeds that far? I don't know.
It's your call. It's your podcast.
But yeah, I think Joker is bad, and that's my overarching takeaway. No women, and not nearly enough representation of the great year for women that it was this year. And
yeah.
Joker is not good. I don't get it at all.
Okay, so I will not watch Joker. I'm yet to see it. I had no interest in seeing it. And then, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, it's winning all these awards. And I go, oh, shit, maybe I have to watch it reluctantly. But you, as my movie shaman, say no, and so I say no.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth watching, I guess.
But is like, it? Is it?
It's interesting. It's not a bad, like, it's very good technically. Like, the score is really good.
Didn't it win the Golden Globe for score?
This did it? I don't know. I don't pay attention to the Golden Globes.
It's just tones.
Yeah, and like he created a gritty Gotham/New York, whatever you want to call it.
Cool.
Through shot composition and through like set design in a way that I found interesting, but it's just very dour. And I thought the script was bad. I guess is ultimately what my concern is,
and not like in a Dieter's critiquing Aaron Rodgers way. You're talking like in a legitimate, cross the board, ubiquitous manner.
I actually thought it was pretty bad, to be honest.
I'm definitely not watching it then. Watch it win though.
It could win for adapted screenplay. I think Little Women should win for that, but I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question.
You think a lot of Little Women should win a lot of things? So
I do.
Here we are.
Well, I think Parasite should win most everything. To me, like, the four clear best movies that are also, like, nominated substantially this year are Parasite, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Little Women, and 1917. Those four movies are all great. They are all very deserving.
Fair enough.
Dieter, do you have anything else? I feel like I just talked at you. About movies for a while.
Listen, Sam, it's mutual in this world. I just come on your podcast and then vent on whatever I had going on in my head all day, and you sit there patiently and listen, and I learned something listening to you talk about movies, so I appreciated that. I have nothing else to say.
Tell people what's going on in your life. You have a new radio show. You have...
Things. For better or for worse, I've been filling in. We'll see if it's a permanent thing. Things are happening on that front one way or another. We'll find out sooner rather than later. But if you're in the Bay Area or literally anywhere on the West Coast, it sure seems, KMBR between 10 and midnight, Monday through Friday, I'm hanging out and talking at you. So that's always fun. And so long as the 49ers continue to win, I will continue to hang around with them because I am the ultimate ring chaser. Hung around the Warriors for a long time. That worked out pretty well for me. And so now I'll hang around another good team until that train runs out. And then I guess I'll have to figure out what to do with my life. So that's kind of what's going on with me. It's a busy time.
Dieter is the Bay Area's Robert Horry, folks. He's out here ring chasing.
And knocking down big shots left and right.
Knocking down big shots, ring chasing. Go to The Athletic. I'll have a few things up this week. We're going to, you know, Seth Partnow, Danny LaRue, and I are going to keep previewing trade deadlines for teams. I'm going to keep writing prospect rankings, and I'm going to have some draft stuff coming up, too. So keep it locked there, but until next time, we'll talk soon. That's all I got. Bye.
Bye.